You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray and Shaka Hislop here with you in the studio. We're also joined by Gab Markotti and Jan Agafyortov as we look back at everything that happened in Wednesday's game in the Champions League, starting with the big one between Manchester United and Atalanta at Old Trafford, where United showed great character to come from two goals down to turn things around and win 3-2 with great goals from Marcus Rashford, Harry Maguire and Cristiano Ronaldo. With the winner, of course. Jan, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was never in doubt, was he?
Never, ever. But is there a more Ole Gunnar Solskjaer night than tonight? So everybody wants to sack him. Everybody depressed. The fans want him out. They are booing. They are 2-0 down. This theater of nightmare in the first half. Body language of the players, catastrophe. And what's happening? He's winning 3-2. Of course he does. That's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer do. He did that as a player, if you know that Champions League final that time. That is his trademark. And now he's back again. Ole in now. And I, hopefully, Craig Burley now, I saw on Twitter that he's in England now. So hopefully he's in Manchester today. Congratulate him.
I mean, it wasn't all roses, was it, Gab? Look at what happened in the first half with those two goals from Atalanta.
No, it wasn't. And look, as you know, this was also an Atalanta side who, you know, we want to talk character. Obviously, United showed character in the comeback. But what about Atalanta going out there? You know, no Piscina, no Hattebor, no Robin Gosens, no Rafael Toloi. They lose Demiral at halftime when they're 2-0 up. In fact, he was injured when he scored that goal. And they hung on as long as they could. And I think, you know, the credit here partly has to go to the crowd. You could sense that lift that they gave the home side. And Atalanta battled as long as they could. But, you know, to ascribe this to some sort of, inspiring halftime tactical talk or some newfound brilliance, I think we're all past that.
But I have to say, because I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying
I know.
I've seen that a bit from outside, because how long can you be on that lifeboat from Titanic? I mean, this is Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet in take 9, you know? And you kind of felt it at halftime as well. Because as you're saying, Gab, there was a special atmosphere at Old Trafford. And we've seen these comebacks games before. And they kind of, and of course, Rashford did it. Of course, it was Harry Maguire who was terrible against Leicester, and he was not good against this Atalanta side either. But you saw also in the first half, and I agree with Gab, Atalanta, who always score goals, that they are a great team to watch. But you always felt, even in the first half, that Manchester United got chances and they could score goals. So I think there was always a kind of hope for Manchester United that they could come back in this game.
Well, if you actually listen to Paul Scholes, former United player, talking after this game, obviously the second half was brilliant, but he feels that the first half left too many questions, and he fears for them if they were to go up against the likes of Liverpool, who are coming up, and Manchester City. What did you make of their performance?
Listen, I understand Paul Scholes' concerns. As an ex-Manchester United player, you see a team play as openly as Manchester United did, and again defend as poorly as they did. That would raise concerns with the likes of Liverpool and City to come, who are as good as Atalanta going forward and a little bit more secure at the back, manage games a little bit better than Atalanta did. Let's take nothing away from Atalanta here, who they stuck to their DNA. This is what has brought them success in Serie A and in Champions League so far, that open attacking football. And while, yes, we can look at chances for Marcus Rashford and Fred early on that maybe would have changed things, you can also look at huge saves that David De Gea made when it was still 2-1, I believe, and 2-2, that kept Manchester United in the game. And all of a sudden, we're having a very different conversation here. The thing for me is, I think United go at home to Atalanta and try to play them in their own game. Try to outplay Atalanta at the game that Atalanta know best. They can count themselves lucky, and we can put it down to character, we can put it down to the crowd, we can put it down to Ronaldo and having that ability to pop up when needed most. Because let's be honest, it was a very different story at halftime. Whether we're talking about Ronaldo and his remonstrations at first 45, something needed to give. Thankfully, they got it. Great finish by Rashford. I thought the pick of the bunch was Maguire. I did not see that coming from him. And then Ronaldo doing as Ronaldo seems to always do.
So there was the atmosphere at Old Trafford. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo, and we know how strong Cristiano Ronaldo can be in games like this especially. But did this show maybe, Gab, that the players are fighting for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
I think, look... you've got two former pros there, right? I think they would know much better than I would. But I think they're very rare, these situations where, you know, even if professionals don't like the managers, unless he's really teetering on the edge of getting sacked, that is when they don't play for them. But I think, in my experience, the players I've known in those situations, they want to advance in the Champions League. They want to win for themselves. You know, I think they work with Solskjaer every day, right? And they're not stupid. They watch the game. Pogba came out and said it himself, you know, after the Leicester game. We deserve to lose that game. They know what happened, but equally, they want to win. They want to go through to the next round of the Champions League. And if they have to carry Solskjaer, they'll carry Solskjaer. I don't think they go out there, you know, for Solskjaer. They go out there because they're professionals. Now, that said, even Solskjaer's harshest critic, Craig Burley, I believe, came out and said that Solskjaer's a good man manager. So on top of that, they probably like him as a person as well. So I don't think that side was ever in doubt. Even when we see United play really, really badly, even when they stunk it up completely, I'm thinking of the Young Boys game or even this first half, I don't think it was ever a case of United players not trying. It's just a case of players being sent out there maybe without the right tactical plan and some of these guys not performing well.
To that point, Keir, I think it's more about the crowd than it is the manager, in all honesty. And listen, as disappointing a first 45 as it was, and the crowd had their say, I thought once that first goal went in, once Marcus Rashford finds the back of the net that early on in the second half, listen, you boo at halftime, and then there's a renewed sense of optimism when the team comes back out. And you want to see a response, and United get it. And listen, we've been able to rightly criticise that crowd in Old Trafford for maybe lack of atmosphere, for not playing their part. But once that ball goes in, I think the crowd absolutely turns, and you get that sense of emotion, you get that feeling of a big game inside Old Trafford. And that, for me, is where you see the players respond. So it's not so much, as Gab rightly points out, it's not so much about the manager, because you can have that performance and absolutely hate Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This was about the crowd and an atmosphere and players responding to a big game on a big European night.
But I think that if you saw in especially first half and the end of the first half, there was some terrifying body language by Manchester United. They were about to give up, and that was when the crowd could kind of help them through. And remember, just after halftime, Cristiano Ronaldo had a big chance as well, and you felt when even he gets dressed in front of a goal, this is not going to be their night. But I think that is fair what the boys are saying, because I don't think that there will be. You can see teams play against their manager. That you can see if there's something that you want to get rid of him. That will never happen to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a kind guy. There's nothing to do with him being bad or anything. I mean, there's only the frustration that you will be from your own performance, and the likes of Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano Ronaldo and all their likes, they think that it's embarrassing that they're 2-0 down against Atalanta. That is no disrespect to Atalanta, who deserve to be 2-0 up. But I think it's more their own pride. And if you see there at the end, when it was 3-2 up, Cristiano Ronaldo was taking a run of like 100 meters to help out in the defense. I mean, you can put that into whatever you want, but that shows you that the characters of Manchester United, that is quite good. What is still there to be seen is that you have a approach to the games, a tactical way, so you can see how they want to play the game.
Talking about Cristiano Ronaldo, Gab, is it moments like this that they brought him back for?
No question about it. As he gets older, he knows how to pick his spots, not just in terms of scoring goals, but also, you know, what Jan described there. You know, that run at the end, you know, it means something. It means something. He's not going to do that the whole game. He probably can't do it the whole game. But he does it in the moment when people notice. And it does give you a lift. And let's not lose sight that, you know, United substitutes in this game, they brought on Jadon Sancho, Paul Pogba, and Cristiano Ronaldo, right? They brought on 300 million pound players, okay? This is the difference. So you get my drift here, right? That's the difference between these two teams. You know, you just send on more strikers. Atalanta, as you said, they're going to play open. They're going to get tired. And you will create chances in that situation, especially if the crowd gives you a lift like they did tonight.
Is this a turning point then, Jan, when you look at the fixtures ahead? Because they've got a decent run of fixtures ahead that are really going to test them. Could this be the spark they need going into those?
It's what I need. I mean, that's what, but there is no turning point at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This is how it's been to be like for 3 years. This will go on. They will probably beat Liverpool. They will lose against Tottenham. They will lose against Atalanta. Everybody will say you get the sack. Then they will win against Manchester City. Then they will lose against Watford. And then they have to win against Villarreal. And in 2 years' time, he's still the manager there. I mean, this is the story of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's life there. And I can't see this as a turning point or whatever. What I do need, or what I do think, is that this will take them with confidence into that Liverpool game, because they have the individuals there that can, and Gab said it, you put on Sancho, who hasn't landed yet in Manchester, and you saw that also after the game when Sancho went off. Mike Phelan, the assistant manager of Manchester United, went over to him and kind of said to him, listen, this is what it means to be with Manchester United, thank you, you contributed. They want to build him up because they need these individuals. Are they supposed to win these massive games for them and stay as challengers for all titles?
Jan's got them beating Liverpool and City. And we're going to put those run of fixtures up again.
I lose it to Watford.
We want you to give us your predictions on that run of games in the same manner that Jan just did, if you will.
Listen, I understand the point that Jan is making. Manchester United, particularly under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, has done this. They, right when you think the end is nigh, they go and win. I don't see them beating Liverpool. I do see them getting a result against Spurs, draw against Atalanta. I think they lose to City. Watford, yes. Villarreal, no. Chelsea, no. Arsenal, yes.
And then what will that mean then if he loses some of these big games?
It means Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be manager in 2026. That's the only thing I can take from those predictions.
Gab, is he the man to take them forward?
I mean, honestly, at this stage, you know, the clock is ticking. There's an opportunity cost, right? If we're moving forward at a very slow pace, if you can look at this United team and you can ask yourself, are they better than they were a year ago? Are they better than they were 2 years ago? Do they look more likely to win the Premier League? I think the answer is probably no. You know, there's three teams, I think, in the Premier League that are clearly better than Manchester United, Liverpool, City, and Chelsea. And I think there were maybe two teams that were clearly better when he took over. I just don't see this forward progress. And on top of that, if your best player is a guy who's 37 years old, you know, what are you building around? Where are the patterns of play? I'm not saying anything original now. I think this is currently where they are. And if the ownership is happy, you know, they'll finish top four. They'll go on a run. They'll win. You know, they might go deep in the Champions League 1 year and then another year they won't and whatever. But in terms of getting back to where they were in the Sir Alex era, I don't see much forward progress or any sort of, if that is the benchmark that we want to judge United against, I don't quite see it yet. And it's been a while.
Well, It's been a while. The Group F standings after the latest results have Manchester United on top. They were third coming into it. Atalanta lose their top spot. They're behind them with 4 points. Villarreal also with 4 points because they beat Young Boys elsewhere in Group F. And that's how things are looking after three games. Gab and Jan and Shaka will all be on tonight's Extra Time. Make sure you get that on YouTube. Subscribe to do so. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Welcome to Camp Nou, where a new chapter in this historic rivalry begins.
Barcelona, Real Madrid.
It's the biggest rivalry in world football. It's El Clasico exclusively on ESPN Plus this Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern. Barcelona taking on Real Madrid. Do not miss it. But as for Barcelona, they got something of a warm-up in the Champions League. And boy, did they need a win in their game against Dynamo Kiev today. They did get that win. Just the 1-0 it was for them. But it gives them some much-needed points because they didn't have any in Group E so far after the first two rounds. Gemma Soler joining us now. She's been in action across all of these Champions League games for the Spanish teams. So, Gemma, it's, how do we look at it? This is two back-to-back wins in all competitions for Barcelona. You could say, OK, they've turned a corner, yet they didn't look so convincing tonight.
Hola, Kay. No, definitely not. It was not a very convincing win. Of course, what they need, it was compulsory. They have the 3 points today. They managed to do that. And as Gerard Piqué explained, the scorer today, he said something like, OK, we knew we needed the 3 points. We needed the victory. We know there is a huge game on the weekend. So it's like they tried to not to get hurt at the end, especially in the second half. But of course, this was kind of bad for the atmosphere, for the trust, thinking on El Clásico. You know, it was quite a cold game today, a sad victory, I think. It was only the half of the capacity of the stadium. And there was such a cold atmosphere because the game, Kay, honestly, I was yesterday in El Metropolitano. I was earlier today at the Camp Nou. It was like two different sports.
Do you think the fans are losing faith then in this Barcelona side, Gemma?
It was not a win to be convinced about this team, definitely not. But of course, it's two wins in a row. Then they had some happiness because they had the happy news that Ansu Fati will be Blaugrana until 2027. So, and they know they are having something that brings some happiness, some sparkling like Ansu Fati. They know they might have some minutes of Dembele, but the picture of the team today was it was not very convincing because also Real Madrid, the fans watched the game of Real Madrid yesterday thrashing Shakhtar. So I don't know if there is that much faith for this first El Clásico without Lionel Messi.
Yeah, obviously, it's Clásico taking on a brand new look. It seems tough for Barcelona at the moment, though, Shaka, even when they win. The fans are still not happy, and you can understand why when they're not quite winning as convincingly as maybe they'd
have. Yeah, listen, I understand, and that game was an awful game to watch. I don't think that Dynamo Kiev did anything to add to the competition, in all honesty. I thought Dynamo Kiev just sat back, soaked up pressure, and hoped for one either moment of magic on their part, or one moment of madness from Barcelona. They didn't seem that interested, even 1-0 down, even as the clock ticked towards 90. So Barcelona did exactly what they needed to do, especially given their start in this competition. So far, they got the 3 points. It wasn't all that convincing. The goal coming from a centre-back at the end of a set-piece. That being said, the set-piece came from probably Barcelona's best moment in the game with Sergiño Dest on the right-hand side, bringing the best out of Dinamo Kiev's goalkeeper. I thought the story was told 15 minutes from the end when Ronald Koeman takes off Memphis Depay to bring on Kun Aguero. That this whole game for Barcelona was about getting through the 90 minutes, getting the three points with as little as was needed, all with an eye on the Clásico on the weekend. You get minutes out of Sergio Aguero. Memphis Depay comes off uninjured, and now focus shifts to that game. So while as a fan, even as a neutral, you're disappointed by it, I feel it had more to do with Dinamo Kiev and their reluctance to go forward at all. And I would go so far as to suggest that with Kiev at home in next time around, the game will be a little bit more open, a little bit more exciting to watch.
Do you think that's the case, Gemma, that we did see some clues as to the players that will be featuring in El Clásico, particularly with players like Ansu Fati being rested?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, we kind of knew that Ansu Fati won't be playing the whole game because Ronald Koeman said yesterday that he was not fit for playing 3 games in a row. So we kind of expected that. Not very good news for Ronald Koeman because we know that neither Pedri or Araujo will be fit for El Clásico. So we kind of gonna see something similar to that. Not definitely Luke de Jong. The Camp Nou supporters were quite desperate with he had some opportunities he missed, and we start listening to some whistles there, and yeah, definitely the main faith is in Pedri is not going to be fit either. That's an important setback for Ronald Koeman. So we will see something similar like the end of the game against Dinamo de Kiev today.
Shaka, it's not like it's the best Real Madrid side right now either. Obviously, they're ahead of them in the table and they've showed some flashes of brilliance, but it's not really the Real Madrid that you would always expect each season. With that in mind, have you got any hope for Barca? What's your prediction?
I still think this is Real Madrid's game to lose. This is not the Real Madrid of old. This is not the Real Madrid of a couple of seasons ago. But this is a Real Madrid that I think are much better, certainly, than this version of Barcelona. Even going into the Camp Nou, even given the history of this tie and the atmosphere with fans back in the crowd, you just look at everything about Real Madrid, whether you're talking about game changers, whether you're talking about that star player to build around in Karim Benzema. I just think they're in a better position right now. If I'm looking at this and I see a Real Madrid win, I see 2-0, and Karim Benzema leading the line and being the one who's writing the headlines for Real Madrid, as he's done all season.
Gemma, you've had a few busy days behind you. You've got a few busy days ahead of you. You were at the Wanda Metropolitano for Atleti losing to Liverpool. There was a feeling from the panel yesterday that the win for Liverpool was undeserved. What's the reaction been in Madrid to this result?
Yeah, okay, so probably they deserved more, Atletico. It was such an entertaining game, 5 goals, excitement, controversy, a lot of things happened there in 90 minutes. So I think Liverpool, I don't know if it was fair or not, but definitely they were lucky. Actually, the best player, the MVP of the game, was his goalkeeper, and this having that treble in front of them, Salah, Firmino, Mane, that means quite a lot. So I think we have to give a lot of credit to Atletico. They managed to come back 2 goals against an amazing team like Liverpool, and they managed to survive 40 minutes with one man down. So I think it was not, of course, a victory. It was 0 points. But I think it was an important game for Griezmann. He had despite the big mistake he did with being sent off, a good night. I think his new fans, they have forgiven him. They cheered at him when he was sent off. So I think there was a lot of positive stuff. Even they couldn't manage to have any point. And it was a great night in El Metropolitano. You know, this stadium is brand new. Atletico Madrid, his way of playing, they need the supporters. And I think this new stadium is from 2017. They only had one great night before. It was against Liverpool in 2020 with that win. So yesterday, even despite the defeat, I think they had a great night. And I think Cholo Simeone, he was, of course, not happy, but not disappointed at all with his men did.
Yeah, and obviously Cholo Simeone won't really criticize referees too much,
no.
But would Atleti fans have the right to feel aggrieved after what we saw at the end with that foul from Diogo Jota?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought without question that was a penalty. And it's amazing to me that VAR sits and says to the referee, go and have another look. Okay, that's what they're there for, just to tell the referee, go and have a second opinion. But even as the referee jogged over to the sideline, to the monitor, I thought there's absolutely no way that he can overturn this. I thought that was a penalty all day, every single day. And Diego Simeone, Atleti fans and neutrals should be right to be asking questions about this. Oftentimes, and this may be the cynic in me, this really does feel like a home field decision. That's the kind of decision you get when you're a big club and you're playing at home. Atletico Madrid are a big club. They're behind. You've just gotten a penalty. And listen, even with the 10 men, I thought Atleti were the better of the two, particularly in the last half hour or so. How this is overturned is simply beyond me. And that has to go down as a referee's mistake.
Yeah, very dramatic night it was in Madrid, and hoping for a very dramatic night in Barcelona with El Clásico coming up this weekend. That's the big one in La Liga, but of course you can see every single game from the Spanish top flight on ESPN Plus this weekend. Valencia Mallorca will be on ESPN2 as well. Make sure to not miss this and take your pick, Atleti against Real Sociedad. That could be quite the game. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Here's a look at Group H after the latest round of games in the Champions League. Juventus on top after winning all of their games so far. They've got 9 points behind them. Chelsea with 6 points, and then Zenit in third, and Malmo with no points so far. But let's talk about Juve with Gab Marcotti, because this is 6 wins in a row now. They're 8 unbeaten. They are top of the group. Is this more what we should be expecting for a Max Allegri side, Gab?
It's 4 straight 1-0 victories in a row. And it's funny you say a Max Allegri side, because that's been debate. Oh, look, this looks like the Max Allegri side that defends stoutly, defends a lead and so on, doesn't play well, but sneaks through. And he slightly bristles at that, and I think it's a bit unfair. I think the reality is they're packing the results in now, you know, with Dybala out, they had Morata out, and that's kind of what they need to do. I think, you know, they probably deserve to win this, although the goal came late. And obviously against Chelsea, I thought they got battered for long stretches, but, you know, they got the win there. And they're in a good place. I think it's important for them to hang in there and win the group. Obviously, they now have Zenit at home. They'll have Malmo to play. I'm not saying nothing's guaranteed in football, but, you know, I think they have an excellent chance to come out top of the group. And I think that's pretty big for them.
You mentioned the 1-0s, and I feel, though, among the Juve fans and even Serie A fans, there's some type of like happiness in a way that, OK, maybe the world is back to normal if Juventus are winning like this.
Yeah, it's not quite normal because Juventus, you know, you refer to them to the scoreboard and they're not in the top four. They're not. But I think it's comforting. Look, there is a school of thought among some Juve fans that this whole sort of trendiness that they pursued with Sarri and then with Pirlo and the attacking football was somehow wrong and it was a violation of their sacred birthright. And then other people, like those running the club, who felt, no, actually, we need to do this because this is modern football and, you know, we can't just rely on getting the break. So I think opinions divided there. I don't think Allegri wants to play this way. He wants to get the results, and I think you will see, hopefully, more progressive football, you know, once they get the big guns back, once he finds the right balance with Chiesa in there as well. And I think you're going to get better.
One Italian side that did not get the results and hasn't got the results so far in the Champions League is Milan. They did not play well against Porto, although they were decimated by injuries. What do you think, Gab? Do you think they should look at what happened with Inter last year, give up Europe, and just look ahead to the Scudetto?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think the Europa League, any kind of European exposure is important for Milan. I mean, you can see the standings, right? Liverpool are out of sight, Atletico Madrid are not. I thought they deserved to beat Atletico Madrid. I think they'll feel that they have a shot in when they go and play them at the Wanda Metropolitano. By the time they play Liverpool, maybe Liverpool will probably have qualified. Maybe you can get something there. I think like it's very difficult to qualify on 9 points, but I think they have to believe that they can get it done.
You think they can do it, Gab, now that they're back there? Do you think they can make it count?
I don't think it's impossible. I mean, the numbers are clear. Teams occasionally do qualify with 9 points. And I think the fact that Atleti aren't playing great, whether domestically or in Europe, although, you know, they had that big comeback against Liverpool for a while, I think that matters. If, you know, Atleti have to go to Anfield next, right? It's entirely possible that the gap will be just a single point after the next round of games, if Milan can beat Porto at home. So, no, I think you continue believing and you focus on the positives that you've had and get your injured guys back.
I wonder if Inter are believing this time around this season after getting their first win in the Champions League yesterday. Do you think they can get out of this Group D, Gab?
Yeah, I think they can. I think they can get out of it because while I love the Sheriff Tiraspol story with all its light and darkness, fact of the matter is you beat Sheriff, you're in a good place. You're ahead of them. Real Madrid close to qualification and you're out of the woods. I don't think it's negotiable for Inter going out at the group stage again this year. I know there's a new manager in. They haven't played great. They've actually kind of gotten worse, I think, game by game in this group. But they got the win, and that's huge. But obviously, they need to beat Sheriff in Transnistria. That's not negotiable. You don't do that, you don't deserve to go through. And let's just end the conversation.
Dzeko looked good, though, didn't he? Gives so much to this side.
Yeah. And look, there's things Dzeko can do really, really well. And there's things at his age he's not going to be able to do. I think the tricky thing for Simone Inzaghi is we're getting to the point where you have to know when and how to use Dzeko. And that has to be part of the conversation. I don't think Dzeko can keep, I don't think the Dzeko-Martinez partnership can be anything like the Lukaku-Martinez partnership last year where, you know, you could be stout defensively and leave it up to the front too. That's not going to work here. So you need to get help in other positions. I'd like to see more of Correa. I think he can help. They're simply not as good as they were last season, but they're still growing as a team and they have room to grow.
Gab, great to hear from you. Thanks for joining us. You can hear more from Gab on the Gab and Jules podcast. They'll be talking a lot more about what we've just seen in the Champions League after match day 3. Make sure to download the Gab and Jules show.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Bayern Munich with the 4-0 win over Benfica. Completely dominant with all the goals coming in the second half and a brace from Leroy Sané. Some lovely goals there. You have to ask yourself right now, can anyone stop them as we welcome in Jan Agafyatov? What did you make of their latest performance in the Champions League, Jan?
It was a great performance, playing away from home against Benfica, very experienced in the European Cups, but from the first minute, they were the better team. Two VAR situations took away the goals, but then they did as they did against Leverkusen, although they now did it in the second half, scoring four Leverkusen. They scored five, as you remember, but they were on fire. And on my man of the match, Leroy Sané, he scored, as you said, a fantastic free-kick goal. Then he made a 4-0 and even made a great assist for Lewandowski's goal. Been a bit under criticism in the beginning of the season, but now he's back to his best. And Coman came on today as well because they were missing Goretzka and Davis, different players that would have probably been in the starting 11, but they were on fire. And they don't concede goals. They have match winners all over the pitch. Benfica had one great chance, and Manuel Neuer made a fantastic save again, as he's used to, because it's hard to also be a goalkeeper for Bayern Munich because you don't get a lot of chances again. Games, but then you have to be there. So Bayern Munich were terrific again tonight.
But you know what, Jan? They are not the favourites with the odds makers. Now, they are second favourites to win the whole thing and to win the Champions League, but that's behind Manchester City. Where do you put their chances?
I think that's fair. Manchester City, I mean, what Manchester City and Bayern Munich have in common is that they are very clear way they want to play. You can see Bayern Munich, it's with that speed, it's with counter-attacks, but they can still calm down and keep the ball in the team. The defense will stand high, they will pressure the whole teams. And Manchester City as well, they look like the real thing. The problem with Guardiola, of course, is that he has never won the Champions League, as he knows, as he's remembered any time outside Barcelona, the safe garden of Barcelona. So I think that is fair to say those two teams are that up there. What is interesting with Bayern Munich, I guess that is the team that haven't invested so much in the team this season. So it's an experienced team, but still they have like the young lads in their team that is now going into central roles of the team. So I think the punters this time would make it right.
Meanwhile, on the receiving end of a 4-0 drubbing yesterday were Borussia Dortmund against a brilliant Ajax side. What's going on with Dortmund, Jan?
I was sitting in a German studio yesterday, and I said before the game, I said that Dortmund is not as good as they look like because they're conceding goals for fun in the Bundesliga. Not only Greuther Fürth and Bochum have conceded more goals, but they've been lucky to have match winners in the team, scoring goals enough to just close to Bayern Munich at the table. But Ajax, that was a fantastic performance of Ajax. We've seen this before. They went all the way. They should have probably been in the final. Remember that semi-final against Tottenham where they were, should go on there. And the Brazilian Anthony was fantastic. And they're coming Gruvenbach. I'm not sure if I pronounce this correct, but there's so many talents in there. Yes, Ajax could go. I'm not saying all the way, but they can also be go a long way this season. The problem for Ajax, which has been for a couple of generations, when they have a great team, they are sold off. And that is the sad thing and good thing about being at Ajax, that you will always lose the team and then you have to start all over again. And the good thing about Ajax, and the same as last night, when you look at Ajax, you just see the Ajax of the 70s, 80s, 90s, going into a new period, the last 20 years. And as you can see on the table now, with 9 points, and they got Dortmund away in the next game, if they can avoid a loss there, they are more or less already through.
I mean, you say that. Erik ten Hag has lost those players, like you talk about the players going. Frankie de Jong, Matthijs de Ligt, Ziyech, Donny van de Beek. And look what he's doing with them. They're playing great football as well. Top of the league, top of their group here in Group C. They completely outclass Dortmund. It would be hard to get a bet against them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we should learn of them is that they've been very loyal since the Johan Cruyff times for 50 years ago. You know how they want to play. And it's not like it's easier, but it's easier because they're always looking for the same type of player. If you see this Ajax team compared with the team that won or were in the semifinals of the Champions League and unlucky was knocked out there, you can still see the defined role that are in the team. You can see who got a De Ligt role, who is the De Jong role, who is Van de Beek role, and so on and so on. And we know that if they get these players sold, okay, then they need a couple of more seasons, then they will build up something again. So when you see all the money being spent in and around English football, you would think that they could learn a bit from teams like Ajax, because if you mix that with money, you have a golden formula.
Yeah, don't miss Ajax this season. Even Rafa van der Vaart said that they gave him goosebumps in that performance. Meanwhile, in Group G today, a couple of games for you. The game between Lille and Sevilla finished goalless. Salzburg beat Wolfsburg 3-1 and cemented top spot in the group there and are now in a great position to advance to the knockout stages for the first time in their history. Bundesliga action coming up this weekend. All matches available on ESPN Plus. If you'd like to see Bayern back in action and whether they'll score first half or second half goals, they'll be up against Hoffenheim on Saturday. And that takes you all the way through to Sunday when you will see Bochum against Jan's former team, Eintracht Frankfurt. Newcastle United have confirmed that Steve Bruce has left the club by mutual consent, and now all eyes on who will take his position. Paulo Fonseca at the top of the odds there, Lucien Favre, Eddie Howe, Roberto Martinez. You see Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard have also had their names mentioned, and Graham Jones too. Shaka, who would you like to see sitting in the hot seat?
Who would I like?
Yes.
My money is on a Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp co-manager role for Newcastle United.
They don't have the odds of 1 billion to one.
That's the rest of it. You asked me a pretty simple question. I give you an honest answer. Listen, I think Paulo Fonseca is a wonderful candidate. Never got the credit that he deserved at Roma. And as I look down that list, there are a number of names that just don't connect for me. I think Steven Gerrard is a great candidate. Frank Lampard, former teammate of mine, but I'm not sure if he ticks all their boxes. Fonseca
for Shaka. Going to be interesting to see. Thanks for joining us on FC. We'll see you again tomorrow. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got Shaka, Gab and Jan here. So that does mean we won't have any bad Sean Connery jokes tonight. At least I hope that's the case.
there were some bad ones.
Really bad.
I blame
ones.
You, Keith.
I didn't help. I did
I
not help
you.
The cause, so I'm sorry. I will not make any tonight, all right? First up, Mike, this is for you, Jan. So was Craig right? Ole pulling out the odd clutch win at the last minute to stave off the sacking pressure until the next batch of poor performances?
Yes. This is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is doing. And I said on Saturday, I was asked, would you sack Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, I will never sack a Norwegian. And then Gary Neville the next day said, I will never sack a former teammate of mine. But of course, I mean, we can all see that what Manchester United is lacking is that you can't see how they're going to play, and you can't see when they are bad. You can't see, they are so bad when they are bad, if you know what I mean. With Manchester City and Liverpool, when they're bad, they still got a pattern there to be seen. But yes, I think we will see this for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as long as he is at Manchester United. And tonight was a typical Ole Gunnar Solskjaer night, under pressure, getting back, winning. Cristiano Ronaldo. And then of all people, Harry Maguire scoring a fantastic good goal, by the way, and make it 2-2. He can't defend, but he can't score goals at the moment. Nobody can't
what
defend.
Are you laughing at, Shaka?
I mean, this is not just, yeah, but this,
can't defend.
Now, this is go now ahead. Say it, Shaka.
No, I was just saying I was laughing because here we are praising Harry Maguire, and you just go and take him out of the knees, yeah.
No, but it's interesting, boys, because and girls, because we are discussing the same thing in Germany. We're talking about Mats Hummels. Everybody loves Hummels. It's like everybody loves Raymond. That's serious in USA. I mean, that is the same thing. But he can't defend. And because he's good looking, he got a best Cruyff trick of all defenders of all world. He won every title. He's a fantastic football player, but he can't defend. And yesterday in Ajax, when they lost 4-0, he was at least involved in two goals. He's a fantastic good player, but he's struggling to defend. And Harry Maguire, if you see Harry Maguire and Lindelof, Shaka, tell me, would you be secure standing behind the two of them?
Hang on a minute. Do you know what he's done? He's just deflected all the attention off Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, hasn't he?
I'm put it on me, apparently. I'm put it on me to decide between Harry Maguire and Lindelof behind me. I'm staying well away from... Isn't it strange? Craig's not even here and he's still haunting extra time. How is that?
Well, you know what they'll be saying.
You put Craig in.
They'll be saying, oh, look, Craig's not on the show tonight when Manchester United had a big comeback win.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Speaking of comebacks, Gab, what's the best comeback you've seen live and what are your memories of it?
Oh, no question about it. The best comeback I've seen live is Istanbul. I was there as a neutral. Everybody knows what happened. 3-0 up at halftime, 3 goals in 8 minutes, and then Liverpool win on penalties. And it's the first, European Cup since... since when Kenny played. Unbelievable. Since when Stevie played, I might even add. Unbelievable scenes that I think... I don't think anything's going to... I can't imagine anything topping that. Admittedly, I wasn't there for when Solskjaer did his thing in the last minute. But this was probably one of the most one-sided games outside of those 8 minutes that you're ever going to see, which is what made it all the more remarkable.
What about you, Jan?
Well, the key word here is live, because when we talk about comebacks, I mean, Elvis in 68 in Las Vegas, that was a fantastic comeback, by the way.
So he's got an Elvis reference, hasn't he?
Yeah. Elvis being away for 8 years, doing bad films, being in Germany, coming back. But I agree with Gab, I worked on that day. I didn't work live, but I was hosting that program in 2005. We had a Norwegian, Jon Arne Riise, who played for that team, and that was an unbelievable night. I remember... I'm putting it over to the commentator and I said, with 2-0 is a dangerous lead. How dangerous is that 3-0? And we ha 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 ha. And then they came back. Fantastic football night for all neutrals.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Shaka?
Yeah, well, listen, I think that Liverpool game in Istanbul is one of the greatest comebacks in the game's history. I didn't see it live. I wasn't there. I played at Newcastle. I was in goal. We're down to Leicester, 3-0, I think it was. Come back and win 4-3, Alan Shearer hat-trick. I don't think St. James's Park has ever been as loud. That was a crazy, crazy night.
Nice question that was from Jonathan Millen. Okay, next, one for all of you again, and I'll start with you, Shaka. Ethan says, who is everyone's dark horse to make a Champions League run into the knockout stages at this point in the competition?
Does Ajax count?
I think it does count, right?
The truth is, who's counts as a dark horse? Does Atalanta count as a dark horse?
They should really. I mean, should we say an underdog then?
All right, I'm going to go Ajax, but then keep in mind Ajax were minutes away from a final. Was it two seasons ago? Mm-hmm. Do they qualify as a dark horse? It's not for me to say. But between them and Atalanta, I would like to see them. I'd like to see them go deep in the competition, just because of the football they play. Ajax, wonderful history, but we keep seeing they keep putting together these great teams, keep getting all their players taken away, and then somehow just keep bouncing back in a way that nobody else does. I love what they stand for.
Geb, I'd like to know what you say, but I'd also like to know if we're okay calling Ajax and Atalanta dark horses.
Yeah, I mean, one's a semi-finalist a couple of years ago. The other one was should have been a semi-finalist until that late goal for Paris Saint-Germain. It's down to you. I'm going to give you two different teams. I'm going to mention Salzburg, who, you know, with this guy, Adeyemi, they just look ridiculous every week. And the other one, have we already forgotten about the Sheriff fairy tale? I mean, I know they lost to Inter, but this is Inter we're talking about. Inter's got to go to their house, to Transnistria. They've already beaten Real Madrid. Why not Sheriff?
Why not Sheriff? What about you, Jan?
Well, I will stick to Salzburg. I was there live to see their game against Lille. There was a fantastic atmosphere in the studio. On the stadium. And if you take away one of the defenders, who is Ulmer, who is like 34, there is an average age of around 22. And I saw them today again against Wolfsburg. And there's a big rivalry between this little brother Austria and big brother Germany. And for them today to win against Wolfsburg, yes, Wolfsburg went out of form lately. I think they lost three in a row or whatever. But still, I mean, this Salzburg team is unbelievable. And their coach, Jaisle, is 33. And they are on fire. And to see them today again, Adeyemi, just watch. He will end up either Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund or Liverpool, they say. And he could go already this winter, which would be unfortunate for them because they are leading the group now. They'll probably go through. But this team to watch is just so entertaining because there is a freshness over them. They were 3-1 up, but they were like attacking for fun. I mean, they could still have lost the game, but they were just attacking for fun in a high tempo. I mean, I guess that is that drink that makes them fly, I guess.
Maybe. I can't believe Jan didn't say Manchester United.
Oh, that'd have been good.
No? All right, Jan. Will Erling Haaland surpass the goal-scoring record of Messi and Ronaldo? Not the two of them combined, maybe just one or the other.
No, he won't.
Why not?
Because if you have a look at the Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo records, they are so unbelievable. I mean, there is no one you can compare them with. You have to go back to like Dixie Dean at Everton, and not even I lived at that time in the 30s, I guess. But it's that the records of, and it just the stats you had there, saying that Cristiano Ronaldo, everybody said he had a bad season last season, and you saw the, was it 36 goals he had in all competitions? I mean, the goal scoring record of them is unbelievable. Yes, the record so far from Erling Haaland is unbelievable, but I think there is a, you have to always have to play for teams that go all the way in the Champions League and you will win trophies and everything. So although I'm a big fan of Erling Haaland, but I can't see that happening because we haven't seen something like Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi in the 100 years of professional football.
What do you think, Gab? Not anytime soon that we'll see those records beaten?
Well, not anytime soon, because Cristiano doesn't look like he's going to retire anytime soon. But look, those guys are just two ridiculous outliers in every way, shape, or form. And I'd hate to go and start making predictions for Haaland or Mbappe or anybody like that, because it's just really not fair to them. You know, let's come back in 10 years, Kay, and when Haaland is going to be, what, all of 30 years old. You know, if he's in the same time zone or area code as Cristiano, he'll probably still be playing at that point. Then we can have a conversation about it and, you know, project in the future. But for now, let's leave Cristiano and Messi out of it.
I wonder what we're all going to look like 10 years down the line. All right. For Shaka, during warm-ups, would you prefer teammates shoot at you to get a feel for the ball, or do you want them trying to score?
No, what I'm trying to score. You go through your warm up routine with the goalkeeper coach. In my day, you do have the coach, and that was to kind of get you to a level. And then when you start doing shooting practice, you want your teammates to try to score. Otherwise, it doesn't get you seeing the ball as you should at full speed before the game starts.
There you go. Nice stuff there. Thanks so much for your questions on the latest.
I'd want Jan shooting at me in particular.
Yeah, I know.
Because I know Jan could never score me, even in the warm-ups. That's what I really, really
want. We do need Shaka in goal in an ESPN FC shootout.
Shaka, I am a humble man. You know that. I never think of my goals. 308 in 614 games.
Never.
Yeah, no problem.
Never once.
That and Elvis.
Never once.
You never mentioned that and Elvis.
Don't forget, ESPN FC is available daily. And don't forget how many goals Jan Agafyotov scores, because he hasn't.